Well, thank you, Mr. Klein, and hello to everybody. And greetings also to those listening online or maybe listening afterwards. Have you ever woken up in the middle of the night and you've just had a dream or something and you've got this weird idea in your head and you don't know what it is, but it's so interesting, but then you wake up in the morning and you've totally forgotten about it? Well, that happens to me quite often. And then several nights ago when I was trying to decide on a topic for this message, I woke up during the night with a thought about faith as a grain of mustard seed. And knowing how my mind works, I thought this might make a good topic, but I knew I'd better write that down or else I wouldn't have any recollection of it in the morning. So I did write it down, and I started to expand on it as part of this message. And as I was working on it, the message progressed into a more general thought, not just faith as a grain of mustard seed, but the idea that God cares about even the little things in our lives. He cares about this little mustard seed, or he knows about it. We sometimes don't recognize that he is aware of even our smallest concerns, no matter how small they are. They could be important to him. So the title of this message is Our Grains of Mustard Seed. Our Grains of Mustard Seed. And as we will find out, that small symbolic seed can help us realize some of the details of God's involvement in each of our lives. Now, we're all familiar with the parable of the mustard seed. It's a very short parable given in two verses in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But this very short parable has a very important meaning for each of us. And I'll be taking a deeper look at that meaning as we progress through the message. I'll start by reading each of the three references, and you don't need to turn to them. You're all pretty familiar with it. The first one is in Matthew 13, verses 31 through 32, saying, another parable he put forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all the seeds. But when it is grown, it is greater than the herbs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches. In Mark 4, verses 30 through 32, he says, then he said, to what shall we liken the kingdom of God, or with what parable shall we picture it? It is like a mustard seed, which, when sown on the ground, is smaller than all the seeds on earth. But when it is sown, it grows up and becomes greater than all herbs and shoots out large branches so that the birds of the air may nest under its shade. And in Luke, he says pretty much the same thing of the mustard seed. And he says that it grew and became a large tree and the birds of the air nested in its branches. So he says pretty much the same thing in it about how this starts out so small and turns out to be so big. But his disciples didn't always understand or grasp what he was talking about. So Mark 4:33, right after the verses about the mustard seed, tell us that Christ explained it to them. And Mark 4:33 says, and with many such parables, he spoke the word to them as they were able to hear it, but without a parable, he did not speak to them. And when they were alone, he explained all things to his disciples. So he spoke to them in parables, but he knew that they weren't understanding it, so he would go back and explain them to them. Now, in my mind, Christ's use of the mustard seed in this example suggests that that seed must be one of the smallest around. I've never seen a mustard seed, but maybe some of you have. In my mind, I visualized it. He's talking about how small it is. I thought, well, it must be almost like dust then, like something you could just scatter around and barely see it in the air. But in reality, it's not nearly that small or fine. Wikipedia talks about the seeds and says that they're usually about 1 to 2 millimeters in diameter, and that's still pretty small. It's 0.04 to 0.08 inches. And it describes the color from yellowish white to black. But that tells us that if they were lined up in a row, it would take roughly 13 to 26, because they vary in size. If you put 13 to 26 in a row, it would make an inch. But still, these mustard seeds are about 10 times as large as a grain of sand, or salt rather, and there are about 150 grains of salt per inch if you cared to spread it out and count it. I didn't, but in my mind I thought of them, well, how do they compare in the size to the size of a black peppercorn? I think we've all probably seen peppercorns that you put into a grinder and it grinds them up, and they're pretty small. I actually took some peppercorns and saw how many does it take to line up to make an inch. And I could fit about 6 of them into an inch. So this mustard seed is about half the size in diameter of a black peppercorn. But the actual size itself isn't what's important. The point is that Christ uses something small to show us that something great can come from something very small. And it also assures us that God cares about the little things in our lives. Now, I don't want to minimize the major cares and concerns or problems in anyone's lives, because I know a lot of people are going through or have gone through some very major cares in life. But we know that God cares about them, but a lot of our cares in life could be described as annoyances or nuisances. They aren't really major cares. They don't weigh on my mind for a long time. It's just the thought, oh, I was just at the store and I forgot to pick up this and this. I'll have to go back there sometime. Or I forgot I was going to do this today. Well, I'll have to do that later. Or I forget people's names. I have a hard time with that. The older I get, I'm finding that I can't always connect names and faces anymore. We sometimes get temporary aches and pains that sometimes happen, and a few days later you think, oh, wait a minute, I forgot. I had that pain in my thumb the other day. Hey, that's gone. So little things. It can be getting stuck in traffic, or concerns about what if I get caught out in the rain, kind of preparing for that, just little things in life. These all may seem important at the time, but in most cases, we soon forget about them. Now, sometimes the result of one of these temporary issues can be a blessing in a way. And earlier this month, just as I was indicating, I was making a quick trip to Cub to pick up a couple of items that I had forgotten to get earlier. And on my way there, I was traveling on a 4-lane road in town. I live in Anoka. It's a local street with 4 lanes, and there isn't room enough for a shoulder. There's about that much room between the right lane and the curb. I was in the rightmost lane. The car traveling in front of me in the left lane decided to change lanes and make a sudden cut. The person cut me off. So I was forced to drive up and onto the curb. I would rather go up on a curb than hit another car. It's much less problems in the long run. And I was in her passenger side blind spot, so she wasn't really aware that anything had happened. She just nonchalantly kept on going. But my right front tire was destroyed. And fortunately, the wheel itself was okay, so I could just put the temporary spare on and I took it to the Toyota dealer, took the car to the Toyota dealer. That was about 5 minutes away, so not much out of my way. Unfortunately, again, they had the tire that I needed in stock, and so I was able to get two new front tires. I was going to have to do that pretty soon anyway, and you don't want to get just one of them or it'll run out of balance. So I got the two new tires. And also, fortunately, they had an opening in their service department right away. They had someone there who could get the job done. So I got that entire job done in about an hour. So result was that I was able to get the two new tires put on immediately without having to make an appointment. The Toyota dealer that I took the car to was right next to the Cub that I was going to go to anyway, so my shopping errand was more than accomplished very easily. Now, did God plan that out for me? Was he sitting up there somewhere kind of chuckling as this was happening? I can't say that he did, and I don't think he works that way necessarily, but he certainly was aware of my needs, and he took care of them. Otherwise, I might have neglected the tires until something major happened, and I wouldn't want some kind of blowout to happen when I was in the middle of traffic on the highway. And it's also motivation for me to get the other two new tires, or the other two tires, the rear ones, replaced shortly. Now, if you'd like to turn to Luke 12, 6 and 7, it talks about how God cares for us, about how much he cares for us. He talks about sparrows and the hairs on our head. In Luke 12, verse 6, are not five sparrows sold for two copper coins? And not one of them is forgotten before God, even sparrows. God doesn't forget about them. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. And I looked it up, and on average, we have somewhere around 100,000 hairs on our heads. Now, if you multiply that by all the people who live now, all who ever lived, apparently God knows about every single hair on every person's head who had ever lived. And God is also aware of situations in our lives where we may need some extra help and assurance. If you're still in Luke 12, continuing on in verse 8, also I say to you, whoever confesses me before men, him the Son of Man also will confess before the angels of God. But he who denies me before men will be denied before the angels of God. In verse 11, now when they bring you to the synagogues and magistrates and authorities, do not worry about how or what you should answer or what you should say, for the Holy Spirit will teach you in that very hour what you ought to say. God's aware of things going on in our lives, and he's there to step in and take charge and help us through it. In Psalm 50, and you don't need to turn there, he talks about how he knows about the bulls or the goats or every beast of the forest and cattle on 1,000 hills. It says, I know all the birds of the mountains and the wild beasts of the field are mine. So he knows all about each of them. Every little thing about us is known to God. He knows about our sins, and he's quick to forgive them, as long as we ask him for forgiveness, but we know that doesn't give us license to continue sinning. So what could we do? With all of God's greatness, how can we possibly give proper honor to him? We need to remember that God treats us, each of us, as individuals, and he doesn't compare us to each other. A classic example of this is the lesson of the widow's mites. Let's look at it briefly. You don't need to turn there to Luke's account, but in Luke 21, 1 through 4, And he looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow putting in two mites. So he said, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all. For all these out of their abundance have put in offerings for God. But she, out of her poverty, put in all the livelihood that had. And this describes the basic account as we remember it, that this widow gave in such a tiny amount, but it was all that she had. So in effect, she was giving more than the wealthy people around her. But we can get a little more perspective on this if we look at Mark's account. So if you turn to Mark 12, 41 through 44, Mark 12, 41 through 44 gives the same account. Now Jesus sat up at the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then the poor widow came, threw in two mites, which make it quadrants. So he called his disciples to him. He's going to explain about this. He said to them, assuredly, I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. This makes it a little clearer about how much these two mites, as small as they were, meant to her. It was her whole livelihood. If we back up a couple verses to verse 38, still in Mark 12, Christ is speaking. Then he said to them in his teaching, beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplaces, the best seats in the synagogues, and the best places at feasts. And then he says in verse 40, these scribes who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers, these will receive greater condemnation. So if anything, it makes it sound that these scribes may kind of encourage or forcibly encourage people to give more than they're able to the point of losing their homes. And we don't know for sure if that's what happened to this widow, but it could have happened to some people. And it gives us a sympathetic view of her possibly being forced into giving more than she was able. She gave her whole livelihood and perhaps lost her house. God doesn't want that from any of us. So if anything, this increases our understanding of God's respect for her, his understanding of her situation, his understanding of this very small offering that she gave. So in a similar way, God knows all the little details of our lives, and he helps us to make the right decisions based on the right circumstances for us and not the right circumstances for someone else. There's another small gift that's described in each of the Gospels, a small gift that went a long way. We read about Christ feeding the 5,000, and all four of the accounts tell of the five barley loaves and two small fish that are miraculously turned into enough food to feed 5,000. But only the account in John's Gospel tells us where those original loaves and fish came from. If you'd like to turn to John 6, I'll be reading in John 6, verses 1 through 7. It says, John 6, verse 1, after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Then a great multitude followed him because they saw his signs, which he had performed on those who were diseased. And Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. Now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes, seeing a great multitude coming toward him. There were these 5,000 people who were gathering there. He said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? But this he said to test them, for he himself knew what he would do. Christ knew the miracle he was going to perform. But Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. If we refer back to or remember Matthew 20, verses 1 through 2, it talks about how much a denarius was worth. In Matthew 20, 1 through 2, the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. Now, when he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard. So they needed 200 denarii, or 200 days' wages. And it says, they're saying that even 200 days' wages, or over half a year's wages, wouldn't be enough to provide food for the 5,000. But we know the miracle that he performed. In John 6 and verse 8, it says, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there's a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish, but what are they among so many? So we see that these loaves and fish came from a lad who was there. He would have been a boy, a youth, a young man, probably a teenager. We don't know anything about him other than this reference. Compared to the men present in the crowds, he was little, he was young, maybe insignificant, maybe he had been shoved out of the way so others could get closer. He might have been taking food home to feed his parents and his family. We don't know what was on his mind, why he had the loaves and fish. But God knew the situation. God knew why he had them. And God used this lad to provide food for the multitudes. It's significant that God used him in this example. Someday we may be able to find out all the details about him. This lad, this young boy, was there for a special purpose. And likewise, each of us is here for a special purpose. We don't necessarily know what it is, but God has something in mind for each of us. God knows about and cares about all the details of each of our lives, just as he cared about and still cares about that lad. Then we continue on with the story in John 6, 10 through 14, where they're going to feed the 5,000. Then Jesus said, make the people sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so there was plenty of room for them to sit down and spread out. So the men sat down, in number about 5,000. Jesus took the loaves. When he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise of the fish, as much as they wanted. So when they were filled, when all the people there were filled, they had had all they could eat of bread and fish. He said to his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain so that nothing is lost. Therefore they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which were left over by those who had eaten. Then those men, when they had seen the sign that Jesus did, said, this is truly the prophet who is to come into the world. Now, if that lad had intended to bring his loaves and fish back to feed his family, he certainly would have had ample food there because of this miracle. He would have had ample food to take back with him afterwards. And we can read about another way God looks out for us when we consider the lost items that are mentioned in Luke 15. Luke 15 includes parables about lost sheep, a lost coin, and a lost son, the prodigal son. And these are various details of individuals' lives that show how God knows and cares about each of them and each of us. It would be easy for us to gloss over the losses and minimize them, but they're recorded for our learning and understanding. Now, in the introduction to the chapter in Luke 15, verses 1 and 2, The Pharisees and the scribes are looking down on the tax collectors, especially the sinners, whom they consider to be far inferior to themselves. It says in Luke 15, verse 1, "Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to him," to Christ, "to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" I think we're all familiar with the parables, so we won't go through the details, but just the conclusions of them. The first one is the lost sheep. You know, one sheep that was lost, and how the owner rejoiced when that sheep was found again. It says in Luke 15:7, "I say to you that likewise there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 just persons who need no repentance." The lost coin, this lady who lost this coin and rejoiced so much when she found it. It was just a coin. I don't know how much it was worth. Probably not a lot, but it was everything she had. And to this, the parable says in Luke 15:10, "Likewise, I say to you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." If one person appears to be lost, God rejoices over that returning sinner just as much as this widow rejoiced over the lost coin. How about the prodigal son? That's in Luke 15:31 through 32. And the result of that is, "And he," being the father of the two sons, "said to him," he said to the older son, "Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours." Remember, this older son was complaining, "Well, how come you prepare a big feast for my younger brother who's coming back, when he was so wasteful and he spent all his money?" So his father is telling him it was right that we should rejoice. He returned. And he says, "Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." Now, in each of these cases, God knows all the details about the people and the situations, and he puts them all in the proper perspective. And likewise, he understands all the details, even the smallest ones, over the lives of every one of us. And he puts them in proper perspective as well. We could also read about the sheep and the goats in Matthew 25. And I think we're pretty much familiar with that. The sheep are on one side and the goats are on the other. And God says about to those on his right hand, "Come, inherit the kingdom prepared for you. I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." And it says the righteous answered him and said, "Well, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? Or when did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? We never did any of that." And the king will answer and say to them, "Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me." And to those on the other hand, he says, "Depart, go away. I was a stranger and you did not take me in, naked and you did not clothe me, sick and in prison, you did not visit me." And in verse 44 of Matthew 25, "Then they also will answer him, saying, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you?' We never saw that." Then Christ will answer them, saying, "Assuredly, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me." And these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into everlasting life. Now, all of the examples in this message are meant to assure every one of us that God knows about, all about, each of our lives. He knows all the details of each of our lives, all the little things. He cares about us. He cares about the little things, just like the grains of mustard seed in our lives. When we go through trials or even just annoyances, God knows and God cares. And he will often use these experiences to help us learn and to grow and to have compassion and understanding for others.